some legislation passed. All of the above and drill, baby, drill.
Republicans return to Congress with a call for an energy bill. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 8th of September. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, how high fuel costs are affecting recreational boating.
A lot of guys just don't go as far as they have in the past. Running for fishing sweet spots is no longer something that the average boater can afford.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
9 out of 10 of Alaska's boating fatalities are adult males. Most drowned following an unexpected fall or capsize into cold water. Cold water can kill the unprepared, regardless of swimming ability. Wearing a life jacket can make the difference between life and death. Make your family's boating memories good ones. Always wear a life jacket when boating Alaska's cold water. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
Congress is back at work in the nation's capital after the long August recess and the Democratic and Republican national conventions. The House and Senate only have a few weeks to tackle a slew of issues before members head home again to campaign and prepare for November's election. At the top of the agenda is energy, but as APRN's Libby Casey reports from Washington, D.C., Congress is a long way from agreeing on an energy plan.
Everyone in Congress says they want an energy solution, a way to bring down prices at the gas pump, and a way to ensure that America can be more energy independent. The differences come when you talk details about how to get there. Some House Republicans say the answer is drilling offshore and in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. A handful of them stayed in Washington over the August recess to drum up publicity for drilling and a related energy package. Over the 5 weeks, 136 Republican Congress returned to Washington at some point to keep momentum going on their American Energy Act. In addition to drilling, it calls for building new refineries, establishing a fund with drilling profits to pay for renewable energy projects, and focusing on nuclear power and coal-to-liquid technology. It would offer tax incentives for energy conservation. Democrats criticize that it doesn't go far enough to support renewable energy, reward conservation, or hold oil companies accountable. Democratic House Speaker Nancy Pelosi plans to unveil her energy plan in Washington on Tuesday. But Monday was the Republicans' day to set their agenda. House Republican Minority Leader, Ohio Congressman John Boehner.
At the first opportunity that we get this week, we are going to force a vote in the House on our comprehensive all-of-the-above energy plan. The time for talk is over.
Boehner led a press conference Monday afternoon on the Capitol steps to congratulate his colleagues for their August protest and to demand movement on their energy plan. Alaska's Congressman Don Young attended the press conference to show his support but did not speak. Young's bill calling for drilling in ANWR is part of the Republican plan. Tennessee Representative Marsha Blackburn visited the Arctic Refuge last month as part of a pro-drilling trip and called it a vast and desolate landscape. On Monday, Blackburn drummed up enthusiasm for development.
This is one of the few times that the American people are excited to see Congress back in session. And they are excited because they know the time for action is now. And they want to see some legislation passed. All of the above and drill, baby, drill.
Republicans cheered, but the reception wasn't all positive. Dozens of protesters turned out to deliver a message of environmental conservation.
Clean energy now! Clean energy now! Clean energy now!
They carried signs that read, "Protect the Arctic," and "Drilling is not the answer." Alaskan Lucy Beach held a sign that said, "Caribou, baby, caribou." Beach is the executive director of the Gwich'in Steering Committee and traveled from Fairbanks to be in Washington this week. She makes the long trip a few times a year, sometimes more, when the refuge is in danger.
It's not worth destroying this unique place, devastating the porcupine caribou herd or the Gwich'in Nation for a few pennies difference at the pump 10 years from now. Some places need to be left off limits, and this is one of them.
Activists are watching to see if the Bush administration tries to push Anwar drilling through before leaving office. Neither presidential candidate Barack Obama nor John McCain supports drilling in Anwar, but some environmentalists are concerned that the Republican candidate's choice of Alaska Governor Sarah Palin as his running mate will change his tune. Palin is pro-drilling and in the past has talked of hoping to change John McCain's mind. McCain recently did change his position on drilling on the Outer Continental Shelf, now saying it should be opened to exploration. But Lucy Beach says she believes McCain will hold his ground when it comes to Anwar.
I think Senator McCain is a man of integrity. I think he'll stay strong. He's given us his word. We have a resolution with the Navajo Nation to protect the place, as well as many other tribes throughout the country. And I think he understands this place needs to be left alone.
The Northern Alaska Environmental Center's Arctic Coordinator, Pamela Miller, also came from Fairbanks to ask Congress to protect the refuge. She believes drilling in Anwar won't save drivers money at the pump and is a distraction from the need to invest in renewable energy solutions. Miller is also putting faith in McCain's track record.
Senator McCain has said that he's for protecting the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge because it's a refuge. That has not changed. And certainly Governor Palin has brought a different view onto the scene, but we'll have to see what happens in the future.
With 2 months until the presidential election and less than 1 month before Congress plans to leave Washington, people on both sides of the issue say this isn't the last time drilling will be mentioned this year. In Washington, D.C., I'm Libby Casey.
The Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority is looking into using plastic pipe for the last portion of a proposed pipeline from Cook Inlet to the Fairbanks area. ANGDA Administrative Officer Kirsten Sikora says a request for proposals was issued last week for investigation of the idea.
Well, what we're looking at basically is the feasibility of using a low-pressure, flexible plastic pipe from Delta Junction into the North Pole area, to see if it's feasible, if it'll go along the rights of way.
Sikora says the 20 to 24-inch diameter underground plastic pipe would run about 100 miles, where it would connect with a 450-mile steel pipeline being planned from Cook Inlet to Delta Junction. The idea is to make the link to North Pole temporary until a gas line off the North Slope is completed through the interior.
It's a lot less expensive, and the beauty of it is that when the big pipe comes through, we'll actually be able to maybe just roll it up and reuse it in a different area to Pogo Mine or to maybe to one of the military bases if they're interested.
Sikora says the ANGDA board has been working on the latest pipeline proposal since early July, when Governor Palin stressed the importance of getting natural gas to Fairbanks in a shorter time frame than the North Slope pipeline plans provide for. She says ANGDA is beginning the environmental review of the route, which would go from Cook Inlet into Palmer, Glen Allen, Delta, and North Pole. The public pipeline group plans to open a Glen Allen field office to facilitate the project. With more absentee ballots yet to be counted, Congressman Don Young's lead over Sean Parnell has grown to 239 votes for the Republican nomination to the U.S. House. Alaska's Division of Elections counted 27,000 primary election absentee and question ballots on Friday. The State Review Board begins its audit of the primary election today, according to Division of Elections Director Gail Finumiai.
They'll look at all the precinct materials, all the absentee and question ballots, and make sure that all the ballots and votes have been accounted for properly.
As long as overseas ballots are postmarked on or before Election Day, they are accepted up to 15 days after the primary, so more are expected this week. Finumiai says September 18th is the target date for the review board's audit. After that, the candidates have 5 days to request a recount, and both candidates say they will if they end up a close second in the final tally. Finumiai says recounts seldom change the outcome of an election, especially if the original vote spread is fairly large.
The Knowles-Campbell gubernatorial race was recounted, and I believe it had an original vote spread of about 583, and it still was in the neighborhood of the upper 500s at the end of the recount.
The State Division of Elections is under the direction of the lieutenant governor, though it is apolitical. Funumiai says she doesn't recall an Alaska lieutenant governor ever asking for a recount, but it is his right as a candidate to do so. Whoever wins will face Democrat Ethan Berkowitz in the November general election. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Sitkins set aside one day a week to cut down on fossil fuels.
We're really trying to reach, you know, a group of people who might not necessarily consider doing a carpool or taking the bus.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, with scheduled flights to 16 destinations throughout Alaska every week. Northern Air Cargo, building strong relationships with the communities they serve. APRN will be providing special coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood. For sponsorship information, call 550-8400.
High fuel prices mean pain for Alaskans who fly or boat for fun. But KTOO's Weld Royal found the big price at the pump may be helping another group, sellers of bicycles. Her story is part of a Coast Alaska series on how Southeast residents are adapting to fuel costs.
A Friday afternoon in late August in Southeast should be prime time for recreational boating, but a glimpse at the Aurora Harbor in Juneau shows something's awry. A surprising number of slips are filled with sleek boats designed for speed and fun. Owners are washing off boat decks and checking engines. Some are already shutting down their pleasure crafts for the season. Dennis Began has taken his last ride for the summer and is about to put a canvas tarp over his 32-foot trawler. The retiree says he'd rather be spending the afternoon shrimping near the Taku River. But soon, he and his wife will return to Palmer, where they live most of the year.
We've already closed up for the season, probably almost a month earlier than normal. Part of it's due to engine problems, but part of it's also due to high fuel prices.
Began's decision squares with what Dan Voltz hears from customers. Voltz is manager of Murray Pacific, a large boating supplier in Ketchikan. He says recreational boaters are trying to figure out how to enjoy the pastime without going broke.
Recreationally, whether it be fishing for pleasure, a lot of guys just don't go as far as they have in the past. Running for fishing sweet spots is no longer something that the average boater can afford. Charter fishermen, it's definitely affected rates and where they fish.
Voltz worries that some fishing spots close to Ketchikan are being overtaxed by weekend anglers who can't afford to travel further. He's feeling the pinch of fuel prices, too. As fishermen spend more to fill up their tanks, they're not at a store buying new gear or equipment. Private pilots are also looking for ways to save money. At the Juneau International Airport, a gallon of aviation fuel now sells for more than $6, forcing private pilots like Dave Palmer to change their habits. Palmer owns a Cessna four-seat float plane and uses it to fly to a remote cabin near Haines for weekends and days off. He's made a few changes.
The plane gets mileage probably comparable to an SUV. We have made longer duration trips. We don't go for an overnight trip. We'll try to go for 2 or 3 days at a time and spread the trips out, reduce the number of flights we make.
Palmer is manager of the Juneau Airport. He says other pilots are cutting back on joyrides. He hasn't heard of recreational pilots in Juneau selling their planes, but his last visit to the pump forced him to wonder how long he would be able to afford the hobby.
Saturday, when I put fuel in the plane and the guy told me it was over $6 a gallon, I figured that I had over $360 worth of fuel in the plane that day, and I felt like I was about there.
Palmer's plane can burn auto fuel, which sells for about $1.25 less than aviation gas. It's a hassle to buy it at a gas station and lug it to his hangar, but the pilot says it might now be worth it. About a mile from the airport, Glacier Cycles is doing a brisk business, thanks in part to high fuel prices. Dennis Travis is the shop's owner. He says there's a surging demand for bicycle renovation.
Resurrecting the dead, as we call it in the shop. There's just been a lot of bikes that haven't been ridden for years, and they were old quality bikes to begin with, but all the cables and chains are just rusted solid on them. but they were good bikes to begin with, so we were able to bring them, breathe some life back into them.
Travis says Juneau's recent energy emergency slowed sales of new bikes as residents put their money toward high electric bills. But now that Juneau is back on inexpensive hydropower, things have changed. He says customers are snapping up new trail bikes because they're good for weekend outings and for commuting to work. He's also talked with several interested buyers who came in over the summer and promised to be back after their $1,200 energy dividend arrives this fall. With help from Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan, I'm Weld Royal in Juneau.
Alaskan communities feeling the squeeze from power costs can now apply for a renewable energy grant. KDLG's Adam Kane has more.
The state-sponsored agency, Alaska Energy Authority, has recently issued its request for grant applications stemming from Governor Sarah Palin's signing of House Bill 152, which was passed by the legislature earlier this year.
Last legislative session, the legislature went and approved something called the Renewable Energy Fund, which over the next 5 years will make $300 million available for renewable energy projects.
That was Peter Krimp, Program Manager for Alternative Energy at the Alaska Energy Authority. Currently, the grants are targeted at proven forms of renewable energy, intended to provide shorter-term energy relief. Demonstration projects or research which has the potential for public benefit would also be considered. There are two rounds of grant applications now being accepted with hopes of beginning construction as soon as next year.
For the first round, we're hoping to get grants out before Christmas. So these would be projects that could potentially start construction or start work next year. The second round may take longer to go through a review.
Krimp says the AEA is following through with their portion of the application as quickly as possible. There are no monetary requirements for grants at this point. In Dillingham, I'm Adam Kane.
Matanuska-Susitna Borough officials are looking forward to significant changes in transportation during the next decade. The borough is planning a transportation fair later this month to make information on a wide variety of projects available to the public. Today in Wasilla, the public got a preview of what may be in store for motorists in the state's fastest-growing area, a proposed rail link between Point McKenzie and the Valley, and the operation of the ice-breaking Kinnick Arm Ferry Susitna are among the projects under discussion. Other plans include realignment of local roads, a new Mascot bus link between Palmer and Wasilla, and the construction of two traffic roundabouts on Palmer's Trunk Road. Brad Swartz is Transportation Planning Manager for the borough.
Phase one of the Trunk Road project is scheduled to go out to bid here in about a month. That's a DOT project, and they are planning on building a new roundabout down near the new Matsu Regional Hospital, just north of the Trunk Road interchange with the Parks Highway.
Congestion on Valley Roads is a big problem, Swartz says. The borough does not have a complete road network because of so-called collector roads still being built.
Right now, the two main roads to the valley are the Glen Highway and the Parks Highway, and they tend to carry not just the through traffic, but also a lot of the local traffic that just goes from house to house or house to business. And what that means is there's heavy congestion on the existing road network.
Swartz says the borough has a new bond proposal in mind that covers seven different projects for roads that connect neighborhoods with main traffic arteries. Borough officials plan to discuss the bond package in more detail at the transportation fair to be held at Raven Hall on the Palmer Fairgrounds on September 25th.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline.
It will be another year before a decision is issued on the Yukon Flats land exchange, the controversial deal between the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Interior Regional Native Corporation Doyon to trade lands for development and protection has already been in the works 4 years. A ruling on the swap was originally set for this fall, but Fish and Wildlife spokesman Larry Bell says a key administrative step is slowing the final version of an environmental impact statement.
The environmental impact statement talks about an equal value exchange. In order to assure that we're getting that, we need to have appraisals completed. And the appraisal process not only has to appraise the land, but then there's a review process within the Department of Interior. The work getting the appraisal done has just been slower than we had originally anticipated, and so that has caused us to extend the deadline.
The controversial land exchange proposes opening up over 200,000 acres of oil and gas-rich refuge lands to development by Doyon. In exchange, the refuge would get a similar amount of acreage of prime area wildlife habitat for protection. The agency would receive funds for additional land acquisitions if any oil or gas is produced. A draft EIS on the deal that came out last January drew more than 100,000 comments, and Bell says those will be addressed in the final version of the EIS.
The environmental impact statement and the public comment process of that, of course, is not a popularity contest. So we don't look at how many people are in favor or how many are against. What we do look at is, did we adequately analyze the environmental consequences of the exchange?
The potential of oil and gas development in the remote region promises money, jobs, and cheaper energy, but it's been criticized for environmental impacts, including effectively cutting the refuge in half and endangering future area wilderness designations. Sitkins, who rode their bikes, walked, carpooled, or used city transportation to get to work at the end of last week, can count themselves in as participants of the first Freedom from Fossil Fuel Fridays, or FFFF. KCAW's Bonnie Sue Hitchcock reports.
Sustainable Sitka is a group that is looking at ways to get people more aware of small changes they can make to benefit their daily lives. Bria Galvin says Freedom from Fossil Fuel Fridays is a good place to start.
So the idea came as a way to get folks to get out in the community a little bit more, also for to help people improve their health and to help the environment and to save some money.
Galvin says her hometown of Denver started something similar in 2004. She says it was a one-day-a-week challenge sponsored by the Regional Transportation District to try to get people to use an alternative method of transportation, something other than driving. She says every year participation has increased in the program, and even though Sitka is a much smaller place than Denver, Galvin still says it makes sense here, too.
Anywhere we are, we can try to move towards doing more for the environment, doing more for our health, and helping each other save money by working together. And in Sitka, we do have a lot of support here, but I think still for folks who are trying to save money, this is a great opportunity to get connected with your neighbors, to carpool, to try walking, to try biking, and to try supporting our local community bus system.
Freedom from Fossil Fuel Fridays is planned for the whole month of September, so people are encouraged to send an email to Sitka, FFFF, that's four Fs, at yahoo.com to sign up.
And each week you participate, you'll send an email telling us what mode of transportation you tried and how many miles you used that transportation that day.
So if someone's living on an island and they decide they're going to kayak in instead of use their skiff,
we'd love that.
Does that work?
Yes, that does work. That is great. We'd love that. Or even skiff share riding would count as well. Boat sharing. Yeah, so if people lived on the same island and they wanted to come in together, that would count as well.
Many local businesses and restaurants have donated prizes toward the Freedom from Fossil Fuel Fridays. The grand prize, a drawing available to anyone who participates every week, is an electric car ride to a free massage and an electric car ride to a sailboat cruise. Galvin says they realize that many people already do use alternative methods of transportation in Sitka, but the hope is to get people thinking about it even more.
That was initially my thought, was there are a lot of people in Sitka that we should give credit to who are already doing a lot of these things. And so we're really trying to reach, you know, a group of people who might not necessarily consider, you know, doing a carpool or taking the bus or walking maybe with a group of friends, you know, really trying to encourage folks who don't already, mm-hmm. you know, participate.
Galvin says they hope that by doing this every Friday this month, people will start thinking beyond the one day a week or one month a year and work toward an entire lifestyle which is less dependent on fossil fuels. In Sitka, I'm Bonnie Sue Hitchcock.
The Soldotna Rotary Club is teaming up with the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District to help students at a few Soldotna area schools learn about digital photography. KBBI's Mike Mason has the story.
Students in four Soldotna area schools will benefit from the digital photography equipment that was paid for by donations from not only the Soldotna Rotary Club, but also the City of Soldotna, the International Rotary Foundation, and private donations. Local attorney Joe Cashi spearheaded the effort to get the equipment into the hands of students. He says the current project builds on a project started in 2006.
At that time, what we were trying to do is support the newly accredited digital arts program at Kenai Peninsula College. We provided them with a number of Nikon SLR cameras and then also provided one high-end Kodak camera per school to seven Soldotna area schools to help them just get a flavor of it. At that time, Adobe Corporation also donated seven copies for the schools of Adobe Photoshop Elements.
The new project to use digital photography in the schools is being implemented in the Cay Beach Elementary School, Readout Elementary School, the Soldotna Middle School, and the Skyview High School. Cashi says photographs have a use in educating students.
There's a broad amount of literature out there on using digital photography in lessons everywhere from geography and culture through mathematics and special education, and starting a pilot program. So when we approached the school district, they were quite interested, and one of the administrators, Sean Dusick in Soldotna, suggested conceptually that it become used in part as a pilot curriculum development program that would use international contacts. At this point, the intent is around the entire top of the world, northern Japan, Yukon Territory, Scandinavia, and Russia.
To that end, digital photography equipment, similar to the equipment donated to the local Soldotna area schools, has also been donated to six schools in Siberia. Cashi says the intent is to expand the program to include schools across the subarctic. Cashi says it's important to put modern educational tools in the hands of students who are learning in a modern way.
I'm a trial lawyer by training, and what I found over the years was that, the old comment about one picture's worth a thousand words probably understates it. Just depends on different students and on their learning needs and on their particular skill sets and basically the way their brain works best.
In all, the Soldotna Rotary Club has donated enough new cameras and printers to fully equip a 25-student class in each of the participating schools here on the Kenai Peninsula and in Siberia. Cashi envisions the program someday being expanded to other schools and communities on the Kenai Peninsula.
I believe the district is acting pretty wisely in initially doing a pilot program approach and developing the curriculum, see what works, see what kind of curriculum changes they might want to do, and work it through a complete K-12 feeder system before they go out and broaden and spend the money, do the training and that sort of thing. I think it does make a lot of sense.
In an effort to spur interest in digital photography, the Soldotna Rotary Club plans on sponsoring a few camera club parties, and toward the end of the school year, the club will sponsor a fine art photo contest and a photojournalism competition for the students participating in the pilot program in the four Soldotna area schools. In Homer, I'm Mike Mason.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Rosemarie Alexander in Weld Royal in Juneau, Deanna Garrison in Ketchikan, Adam Kane in Dillingham, Bonnie Sue Hitchcock in Sitka, and Mike Mason in Homer. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Ellen Lockyer from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the Rasmussen Foundation, partnering with Alaska's nonprofits and people to improve the quality of life throughout our state.
Wells Fargo, manage accounts, pay bills, and get instant loan decisions online at wellsfargo.com. The next stage.
And by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
Didn't quite catch that report? Want to hear it again? APRN can be heard on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.